views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the program host, guest, or participants, and not necessarily those of KKRN Community Radio and Acorn Community Enterprises, or the underwriters of this station. Welcome to Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. In each of our programs, our intention is to bring to our listeners the best of people, places, and projects of Northern California that we think you're going to enjoy and that we think are exceptional. Today, I have in the studio three individuals who we heard from in a recent broadcast that was called The Role of Faith in Civic Action and Politics. Today's topic is the role of faith in civil resistance and politics. So I have in the studio Reverend Tim Garman, who is the Happy Valley Community Church pastor, Reverend Megan Owens, who's the Pilgrim Congregational United Church of Christ in Reading pastor, and Reverend Bob Swartz, who is the St. James Lutheran Church, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America pastor in Reading also. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you all here. In segment one, you might say, the first one we recorded that broadcast in June, we discussed the challenges, you know, the spiritual leaders face in having a space where the entire community can come in and gather that have very diverse perspectives, but they can come, be together, worship, and feel welcome and safe. And there is still, since, of course, that last broadcast, there's still a lot of division and controversy and upset in our nation. So when you look at what's going on, I want to survey each of you and have you share with our community what are the things that are of most concern to you. And it's not an exhaustive list. This kind of, you might say, things that bubble up to the surface when I ask you that question. So I'm going to start first with you, Tim. When you see what's going on, what troubles you most?
Well, I think what troubles me most, Lynn, is the fact that as a faith leader, we want our churches to be open to each and every person that's out there, no matter what their beliefs are politically. They should be welcome in our church. As a pastor, and I as someone who was in politics, this was a hard bridge to get because I wanted everybody welcome. I did not talk politics in church. I refused to do so. And I think one of the biggest problems we face today is you have a lot of our church leaders, especially here locally, where we're a lot of support for our local, a lot of support for our current administration, the extremist part of that as well. So you have a lot of these leaders out there who are allowing politics to come into that church and they're preaching it to a degree from the pulpit. And that's not the way it should be done. Everybody should be welcome in God's kingdom. And when we start to separate people out, we are putting our own laws in place instead of God's law. So we got to get away from that.
I can understand what you're talking about. And not only in the faith communities, but in community at large and in families, those are huge issues. How about you, Bob?
I would say that I have noticed the interior looking Christian faith of Americans nowadays that kind of gives us when we don't talk about what is going on around us. I agree with Tim to a certain extent that the gospel is not partisan. The gospel is political, though, to a certain extent, because it's about people and it's for people and it has to do with people. And so it has to do with our relationships with each other and our relationship with society and with the world. And so when we cut off any discussion of what is going on in our world and turn our faith into something that is completely interior, then any discussion of what happens outside can just be treated as a matter of opinion. And once we talk about partisan politics, every opinion is treated as if it's equally important, equally valuable. And so we get to the point where I think everybody should have basic human dignity, and no, they shouldn't, have somehow become equally valid opinions in Christian communities. And that to me is the greatest failure of American Christianity in the last 20 years, 40 years.
Wow. Powerful. How about you, Reverend Megan?
So I've been sitting here thinking about this from a pastoral perspective. And for me, I think that Christianity in Big C in general, and especially Christianity in the United States, has a victim mentality that we need to erase. And that I think it plays into aligning with what I would say are cultural or political spaces that cause moral injury. And that allow moral injury, and that allow the continuation of cultural moral injury in our country. Because I think we all want to be Esther, not Xerxes. We all want to be Sarah. We all want to be Hagar and Ishmael thrown into the desert, the victim. What do? Is God there with us? But we don't consider that sometimes we're Abraham and Sarah, and we're so concerned with our inheritance for our own children that we cast out the foreigner. And I think we have to wrestle theologically with these questions as pastors and as preachers. And it's a very fine line because we don't want to alienate people. I think there are people who haven't thought about themselves as privileged because they may not have a lot of money, or they might have intersections of privilege where they are listened to in some contexts, like me as a white woman, and not listened to in other contexts. And those conversations, but that's a more difficult conversation from the pulpit. But I think there's a way that we as preachers can point this out through the way we look at our own texts and sort of try to overcome this victim mentality. And I think it comes from early Christian persecution and an idea that Christians are downtrodden. And in some places, that's still true. But in the United States, I don't really think that's true. I think in terms of very strict moral codes in the cultural milieu that we have now, where we're allowing other voices that might be contrary to Christian beliefs or some people's Christian beliefs, you could say that that might feel true. But I always say in my own work, I've learned that the removal of a privilege feels like victimhood. When you go from Christendom, from an assumed Christendom, to we're going to allow other voices, we're going to allow other opinions, not opinions, but other ways of looking at theological questions into the mix and allow that to inform us culturally and socially, it feels like victim, but it's really just allowing us to have a common ground that might be more indicative of who we really are.
Yeah, there's, you know, it's so complex because, you know, in our nation, you're three Christian ministers, but our nation is very diverse and has many different faith traditions. But primarily the reason I invited you in here is because of conversations I hear in larger community that's talking about, you know, as Christians, I'll hear people make this statement, they're a Christian, and yet they're saying they hate a particular cultural group, or they feel validated to use violence and disregard for others that are different. And I don't see that as the teaching of what Christ was pointing to. So you talked about casting out the foreigners. Do you not believe from your tradition that Christianity should welcome immigrants, Tim?
Jesus welcomed everybody. He made it very clear what was written on the cross. It was written in multiple languages. Jesus was for everybody, all across the world, all the nations. It's very simple.
Yes. How about you, Reverend Bob?
Welcoming foreigners and the aliens that live among us, as Scripture says, is one of the most repeated lines in Scripture throughout Old and New Testaments.
Yes. How about you, Reverend Megan?
I have to echo both of those things.
Yeah.
That really welcoming the foreigner, the aliens that live among you must be treated as citizens. That's all over what Christians call the Old Testament, all over the Tanakh. And then Jesus emulated welcoming everyone to the table at a time when people didn't eat together because of cultural or religious differences, and welcomed people and was criticized for the way that he welcomed people to the table. And I feel like theologically as a Christian, that's a really, really impactful for me, because we celebrate the Eucharist, the communion table, which is the feast of welcome and should be the feast of welcome of all people, and a symbol of that aspect of Jesus' ministry, where we're taking in that commitment to be as Christ, then we're taking in that commitment to be to welcoming all to the table in our lives.
Yes. And if someone's tuning in and is not aware of my background, I'm an ordained minister with a New Thought tradition, Centers for Spiritual Living, that really embraces all traditions. It's more like an interfaith, yet founded on the teachings of Ernest Holmes. So, you know, you pointed out in your original comment, Megan, about that victimhood that oftentimes is embraced. And it's part of the other reason I invited you into the studio, because I think the role of faith asks us to engage in all levels of life. And so when we become and feel like a victim, the invitation that I try to extend to people, especially as my work as a psychotherapist, is how do I deal with this? How do I not sit back and just remain in that pool of self-pity and disempowerment, but how do I help people engage in their power and show up in their own lives for them own selves and their connection to community? I think is important. That's part of the reason I want this conversation to happen. And if we look at 2026, just since the beginning of 2026, 22 people have died through ICE custody. And four were shootings, five now, because one happened on July 14th. And the other deaths occurred in the federal immigration detention centers or medical facilities following someone being detained. And they call it immigration enforcement. So from your faith perspective, when you hear of that sort of thing happening, Do you talk about it from the pulpit with your community? How do you handle that, Reverend Tim?
I'll back up to our previous meeting. I did give one Sunday. I did talk about it quite elaborately about the killing in Minnesota and the two killings. And I have not talked about it since. But I think it's time to go back and revisit that. Because these killings have to stop. They have to stop. This is not right. And as a pastor who you try to keep, at least my point of view, as being a politician or a previous politician, I try to keep the politics out. But Bob made a good point. It's like we can't ignore the conversations, because we have to be able to try to bridge that gap and bridge the fears that are out there. So he kind of awakened me a little bit this morning. It's like, yeah, I need to go back and revisit this. So now I got to really dig deep and a lot of time in prayer and find out how the Lord wants me to lead the congregation in that regard, and how do I put this message together. It's going to be challenging.
It is challenging, I think. How about you, Reverend Bob?
I always find it helpful to try to reframe what is happening, which is to say it is presented to us in a certain way. As you pointed out, it's mentioned, it's presented as enforcement. Mm-hmm. What is it actually enforcing? I think that it is enforcing a sort of dominance over people who are not white. Because one thing that comes along with discussions about this, inevitably comes somebody talking about people who look or sound like foreigners. Well, how do you know that? How would you know the difference between somebody who is born within our borders and who was not? And the only thing it comes down to is appearance and sound. It comes down to whether it seems like they fit in or they don't. And so what we're seeing is a demand for conformity, for assimilation, in some ways that we... You know, we are not I'm going to go back. Ways that we can't expect somebody to assimilate. We can't expect somebody to change the color of their skin. We can't expect somebody to change their past. And so it just becomes this reification of white supremacy upon people who are not white. And once you explain that it's not about enforcing immigration, but it's about something else entirely, that's when you can start to actually have the conversation about the thing that underlies the thing.
Yes. I'm going to do a station ID, then I'm going to come back to Reverend Megan for her comment. If you just joined us, this is a segment of Enjoy Exceptional Living. I'm Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. We're here in conversation today with three ministers from the Christian tradition. We have Reverend Tim Garman, who's from Happy Valley Community Church. He's the pastor. Reverend Megan Owens, Pilgrim Congregational United Church of Christ here in Reading, who's also the pastor. And Reverend Bob Swartz, St. James Lutheran Church, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, here in Reading, California, as pastor. So what are you thinking, Megan, in response to the conversation?
So I always try to tie in these kinds of things, reminding people that, yes, we are still torturing people in state custody through conditions, living conditions. One thing I try to do is I try to connect what is happening now with our history, because we do have a mixed history. As a country, we have a mixed history of always othering someone. I think it's human nature to other. And I think that the more we become accepting of voices that we have previously othered, the more those for whom culture felt like their experience was the norm, backlash. And so I try to be careful because many of my people are old school white liberals, not everyone, but so I try not to be alienating of that. But I do try to bring in our own past and how that is relating to what's happening now with ICE, the normalization of summary execution of black and brown people is part of our culture that we need to wrestle with in terms of the way we look at policing, the way we look at suspects coming into custody, the way we look at, as Bob was saying, who's a criminal? If I do something, if I trespass somewhere, will I be treated the same way as a black person or an unhoused person who's trespassing somewhere? We have to ask those questions. And I think for me, the culture of the ancient world gives us a great, rich resource to say, hey, here are people that were feeling this way. Here are people that were in an oppressive situation, or they were struggling with the same questions of empire and power and God and who is God in our history. And so I try to sort of weave those together.
Yes. And I want to mention to our listeners, too, the ministers are here with me today. Reverend Tim Garman, Reverend Bob Swartz, and Reverend Megan Owens are all from white cultures, ethnic cultures. And I'm Native American and Swedish. My mother was Swedish. My dad was Native American. And I think it's important to realize, as we're talking about the struggle and the call to try to make everyone fit into one concept, is part of the dilemma we're in as a nation. And Bob?
I think this is actually very clarifying for me, because I realized as you were talking right now about being, you know, a white pastor in a white church, my family is of German background. And it was not that long ago. It is almost out of living memory now. But during World War II, and certainly during World War I, German Americans were beaten in the street.
Mm-hmm.
German Americans had their stores set on fire. There was legislation all over the place that speaking German would be illegal. There was fear that German Americans, native-born German Americans, would be spies for first the Kaiser, then Hitler. And so this us versus them has existed for quite a while. It is just, ironic isn't the right word, but strange that now I have been assimilated into this whiteness. 100 years ago, I wouldn't have been, along with Italians and Greeks and
Irish.
And so there is an interesting discussion to be had there. Yes. How come we are happy to cheerlead now that we're the ones holding the sticks and not the ones being beaten?
Yes. How about you, Reverend Megan?
You're reminding me, Bob, of Menachem Reza's book, My Grandmother's Hands. He's African American, and he talks about his grandmother's hands that were bleeding from... They were always swollen because she picked cotton as a child, as a sharecropper. But he talks about the three traumas, the three generational traumas in our country, one being Black people, one being the types of people that immigrated here from white countries, Lithuania, Germany, England, Sweden. They were people with traumatic pasts. They were the indentured servants often. Not always. There were elites, but also, but many, many people came here who have white skin, who of many different cultures, who also carry generational trauma.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes that whose trauma is more important. And so, and then he in the book, it's great. He has like meditative movement exercises to release this trauma for Black folks, for white folks. And then he says blue trauma. And that's the trauma of police forces, of people who are forced to do things that cause moral injury in their job. So, and he talks about if we get together and segregated, I don't like that word, but in like groups and do these exercises and work on generational trauma, that can help with some of this stuff that you were talking about, Lynn, the cultural struggles that we're having because people have different experiences. And what Bob was talking about, like whose trauma is more important to heal through feeling normalized. Yes. I think that's where we are.
Yes. What's your cultural background, Megan?
I am German. German and English is what I know. My grandmother was Pennsylvania Dutch, but not Amish. But that's she spoke it, and she referred to herself that way. So, and then Welsh somewhere. I don't know. I haven't seen a lot. I don't know where that came from, but the name.
Yes.
Owens.
Yes.
Is kind of Welsh.
Welsh, yes.
I haven't added, I don't know who will take this how, but I have an added cultural aspect to my own identity because I was born in Buenos Aires when my parents were living there. And I have always embraced that. And so with questions of where are you from, is weird.
Yeah.
Because I could say I'm from the U.S. because that's my country's been here. My family's been here for quite a long time. But I'm not. But if where you're born is where you're from, I'm from Argentina, but I didn't grow up there.
Yeah.
So, and that's sort of...
complex.
It is complex. In the current conversation about such things, it feels very... whitewashy, if that makes sense, or facade-ish, but it really hasn't been.
Yes.
And, but I think those are, there are many, many people who struggle with those types of identity questions even more deeply than I do because we try to normalize homogenization. And what are we homogenizing to is a question that we have a lot of trouble with.
Yes.
Yes. How about your cultural background, Reverend Tim?
German and Irish, for the most part. There is some other stuff mixed in there, but that's pretty much who I am. But Megan brought up a great point about, I think when our families came here or migrated here, they probably were outcast or had no hope from where the land they left. I mean, you're taking big risks to get on a boat and travel across the world to something new. And so you're leaving because you're looking for greener pastures. But moving back to the topic, I think what we're dealing with in today's age is you have some very extremist Christians out there who are following the lead of the current administration, and they're stereotyping people. They're stereotyping people of color or nationality. And you're seeing this hatred come out, which should never come from a Christian. It just, it shouldn't. But yet we're seeing it day after day, and there was another killing just the other day. It's like, when is this going to stop?
Yes. And, you know, when you have this going on in our nation, and you're speaking in community and trying to give hope and trying to give direction, you know, about the teachings, it's very complex because you know that community you have there in that room is very diverse, not only culturally, but about their thought, their experience, their trauma. I haven't met very many people that haven't had some form of trauma. And so it leaves leadership in a position of, you know, how do I wrestle with this?
It's hard.
Yeah.
Because we got people in our congregations who I would identify as far right extreme, and we have far left liberals as well. So you have to be careful with that. You don't want anybody to get upset at the other side. I think we do a pretty good job at our church of keeping people together, keeping that unity in the church. But it is a challenge when you give a sermon. And you're trying to delicately walk that line of what needs to be said.
Yes.
It's hard.
And I imagine that in doing the input for your community, you're addressing the behaviors of certain individuals versus naming them as maybe a political element. Or how do you work with that, Tim?
Yes, in the church, that's very true. But the problem is I have a life outside of church. Right. And I have a social media outside of church where I'm not so guarded. And sometimes people see that. And I've had people in church ask me, hey, you need to stop posting stuff. And that's hard because I have an opinion. And when my answer to that, it's like, well, hey, what's right is right. And if I don't speak out as a Christian, what I feel is right, then I'm letting God down.
Yeah.
I have to, sometimes you just have to say stuff. You do the best you can.
It's challenging. One of the things I wanted you to speak to directly is, as a spiritual leader in community, do you ever, from your community stance, endorse a particular political candidate, and why or why not? I'll start with you, Tim.
Yeah, thank you. I did. I endorsed Mike Gallagher, District 5, as a supervisor. And the reason I did so was quite simple. I worked with the other candidate. The other candidate... I'll just say it, he's not fit for office. And I got backlash from that. And I will continue to get backlash from that. But I know Mike Gallagher, he's a Christian man, he's a man of faith, he's a good person. And like I said, I know the other person as well. So yes, I did endorse somebody. I did not endorse him from the pulpit. I will not speak the names in the church, but it's all over my social media and my real life outside of church. So it's hard to balance those two.
And I appreciate you differentiating what you do in the role as minister versus personally. How about you, Reverend Bob?
Only the people close to me know who I support as candidates.
So you don't use your leadership in the community of your faith community to say this is the candidate?
No. I talk about issues frequently, but I don't talk about candidates.
Okay. How about you, Reverend Megan?
Well, from the pulpit, I don't talk about candidates. I do talk about issues. I do talk about the world we may want to build, and someone can infer from that which candidate I don't support and which candidate I may support. But I never talk about my voting record or who I vote for or what I vote for. My people do. My people will stand up and call out names and, oh, what are we going to do? I let them because they need that space. And then we pray, you know, it's during sharing. And then other people might stand up and say, well, I disagree with that. I think X, Y, Z, and give this a chance. And nobody rides anyone out on a rail, and we just pray together for a better world, you know. But I don't. I think it's pretty clear because of my stances on social issues, because we're so polarized as a nation and as a town, who I likely support. But I have had people, both extremely as liberal as I am, I guess, and more conservative, assume what I think or what I believe or where I am politically. That isn't the case, but I just sort of smile and nod.
Yeah, have a response or input?
Yeah, I just Reverend have another point I want to make. As somebody who, I was recently a candidate for District 5 supervisor for the race that's still happening. When I backed out of that race is when I endorsed Gallagher. So coming from that point of view, I will tell you, politics and pastor at the same time is very, very difficult. And I was very glad to step out of that role because it was starting to be a little bit of a division in the church. And I had to make a choice. Do I want to continue this path? Do I want to continue this path? Where does God want me to be? After a lot of time and thought and prayer, it was time to step out of the political role. But now you stepped out on paper. It's hard to step out completely like Bob does. Bob doesn't endorse anyone. And I get that. And it's hard. It's hard to just walk completely away from that. But I just wanted to share that.
I do think it's important to note and emphasize that all three of you in the community setting of your faith community do not endorse any particular candidate. For me, I've been in scenarios where I've had people say to me, I was in X community, their home community, and they've made the decision to stop attending because they heard people in that community talking about, in a bad way, about different political leaders. And I've heard it from people saying that they're too leftist, and I've heard it say they're too much far to the right. So I think in many ways, community needs a place to go where it's safe and that they don't have to deal with the political struggles of who's right, who's wrong politically. If you just tuned in, this is a segment of Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. In our conversation today, our guests are Reverend Bob Swartz from St. James Lutheran Church, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America here in Redding, California. Reverend Megan Owens, Pilgrim Congregational United Church of Christ in Redding, is the pastor. And Reverend Tim Garman, Happy Valley Community Church in Happy Valley, California, adjacent to Redding. And so one of the things I want to kind of present for us to kind of talk about, do you feel that faith calls us to take action when we witness the travesties that we see going on? And what ways is it appropriate to take action? So for myself, I contemplate the difference between civil resistance and civil disobedience. Civil resistance is a strategic method of using nonviolent action. It could be a form of disobedience like strikes or protests, boycotts, to try to create political or social change. Whereas the civil disobedience is a tactic of deliberately violating laws, and it's always illegal when you're violating laws, to highlight injustice. And also that requires being the willingness to accept the punishment. So for you, when you are working with yourself and the community, is our faith a call to take action? Who wants to start us off? That's a big question, Reverend Megan.
I can do that. Yeah, it is. It's to take action. I think for me, it's finding your action is not as easy because your action might be different from my action. And again, we've homogenized what taking action means. But I think for some, it's writing letters. For some, it's protesting in the streets. For some, it's locking themselves to a nuclear power plant or similar. For some, it's being willing to be arrested. For some, it's not. For some, for example, the church where I grew up in D.C. became a sanctuary church in the early 80s, and we sponsored a woman activist from El Salvador, and they did it very intentionally and well, and there were people who were not quite comfortable with it. There were people who were willing to be on the front lines out there, and there were people who said, you know, I support this, but I cannot speak out because my job, they worked for the federal government, this was in D.C., or some other job that really would be in jeopardy. And everyone respected all of these positions, and everyone voted to become a sanctuary church and invite this person to be our, like, to sponsor this person. So that to me shows that even within a church, you can have different people doing different things as the church to take an action, to be a sanctuary space, putting up private signs around different areas of the church, whether you need them or not, so that if ICE comes in, you can say, you can't go in there, it's private. Speaking out in different ways in public forums is a way to take action. And then nonviolent resistance is a way to take action. I think it, for me, unless you're harming another person, it's not for me to judge how someone takes action. I hear a lot of, and there's a color line there with what's appropriate and what's not. Like, oh, I don't mind people resisting, but they shouldn't do it that way. Mm-hmm. Well, their experience may say that that's the way they are heard. Mm-hmm. So we need to have that conversation.
I'm also going to ask you to describe what sanctuary church means. Because you could have a sanctuary church, you could have a sanctuary city.
Got it. Yeah. So a sanctuary church is a church that votes to shelter undocumented people and to put themselves on the line to support and shelter those who might be at risk for deportation or that who are undocumented and need help and a refuge. And I would like to say that the concept of sanctuary is ancient and even before the Middle Ages, but certainly during the Middle Ages, if you were running from something, you could come to a church and claim sanctuary. And by law, you had 40 days to sort it out. Mm-hmm. And no one could drag you from that place. So it's not a new concept.
Yeah, and the history of the City of Refuge.
Yep.
Yeah, all that. So thoughts, Bob?
All of this makes me reflect on how people tend to confuse law with morality, yeah, and order with justice. That calls for decorum. You can protest, but do it. You can protest, but do it in this way, or don't do it in that way. Are really just calls to stop. They're calls for order or quiet, not for justice or peace. And to me, that is one of the issues that we have faced as a country for a long time. We have traded quiet for peace, or traded order for justice. One of the things that the current administration has done that I think is not helpful in the sense of being positive in the moment, but one thing that may be a long-term, looking back, may be a benefit, is that in many ways, the current administration has not done anything new. In fact, they're doing things that are incredibly old. They are just making it acceptable to publicly be racist and do racist things in a way that hasn't been acceptable for quite a while. But I'm not going to give them credit for saying they're doing something new or different. I don't think this is new or different at all. I think this is the same dreck that we've seen for centuries. It's just all of a sudden fashionable to be out about it again. And as a pastor, I address this in terms of, I think it was Walter Brueggemann who used the phrase hiding behind the text. You may not like it. I may not like it personally, but this is what Jesus says. This is what Scripture says. And you may take it or you may leave it, but you can't say that you didn't know about it. I think that in an area like this, where we are further removed from the population centers where some of this is happening, there's a feeling of we may feel insulated or isolated. And so the questions of what we can do are different than what they would be in other places. I have latched on to telling the truth about the reality of the situation. And that way, you cannot say you didn't know.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Reverend Tim?
Bob brought up a great topic. Sorry, Bob brought up a great topic about the current administration and the racists being okay nowadays. And it's not new. Bob is absolutely correct. It is not new. I think it's been quiet. It's been maybe dormant, if you will, so to speak, for quite a while. When I got involved in local politics, I didn't know there was a racism problem in Shasta County. I would have, if somebody had told me we had a racist issue here, I would have said, no, we don't. We love people here. It became very apparent very fast. We have a big racist problem in Shasta County, bigger than any of us could ever imagine. You see the racist thoughts and tendencies start to come out and with this current administration, and now it's become the norm. And I think you're seeing it all the way through our county, through our state, through our country, to the point of where, look what ICE is doing to people of a different color of skin. And it's really sad. But backing up to the original question, I think to take action, I wouldn't break the law, personally. I wouldn't do that, and I wouldn't ask my church to break the law. I would strike. I would do all of those other things that would be okay, but I wouldn't break the law.
Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting. One of the things I wanted to share with you, Columbia University Press shared an article, and it is Why Civil Resistance Works, and it was crafted by two individuals, and it's a landmark study that really analyzes the global resistant campaigns from the 1900s to 2006. So we think of the women's movement to vote. We think of Dr. Martin Luther King, you know, all these different movements that use nonviolence. And this book, the core finding is that the nonviolent campaigns were twice as effective as the violence insurgencies in achieving their goals. And it's just fascinating that they call it the 3.5% rule. Notice this. Their findings highlight that no government has ever withstood the challenge from a 3.5% of the population mobilizing an active, sustained civil resistance, which is nonviolent. And so it's the most effective way. And I think it's challenging when there's so many issues going on, and we look and we feel that this is not just, and this is violence, and people get emotional and heated up and really want to take some sort of action. Or even if they don't take action, they're in this stew within themselves or their families that is, one, not healthy, but I think it leaves them in that dilemma of what do I do? And the question that's why I brought you here is, what does our faith say we should do? How do we handle the discord we feel within ourselves? And then how do we be in community, our faith community and larger community, in the way that represents the teachings of the Christ One? Reverend Megan.
As you're speaking, I'm thinking, as you're talking about that study, I've heard that before in a workshop I did a while ago. And that 3.5%. And I think one of the things that the American psyche has an issue with, U.S. American psyche, I should say, has an issue with is that sustained part. We want it to be quick and fast and move along, and it's not working yet, and it's going to take years, and we know it's going to take years. I see it happening. I don't know if it's 3.5%, but I see a lot of resistance in different ways. And I think that what we can tell people to do, like what I talk about a lot, is local resilience. Okay, one thing we can do to stem the tide coming is grow food, be food subsistent, support each other, be a place of refuge for people who feel like they have nowhere else to be themselves, psychologically speaking, create systems of resilience, teach people how to sew, teach people how to can. I mean, these old fashioned things that will help us survive, you know, disruptions, and bring us closer as community. Also, in terms of the nonviolent resistance, I really think it works because it shows who is really violent. So I think that in the civil rights movement in Alabama, the Children's Crusade showed there were things happening before that, but these children are marching and police set dogs on children, and it went on national news. And that was one reason why so many people rallied around it. And I saw at Standing Rock, Native peoples and their allies standing in freezing cold water being hosed off by police. And that's on national news. And I think those images really show who is being violent here. Like it shows the crossing of lines. And especially when the person being hosed down is just standing there, it breaks the narrative that the resistors are disruptive or violent. They're standing there. Mm-hmm. You can't get around that while they're being abused by the state. And I think I wish we could get to a point where we say no before that happens.
Yes.
And we owe a great debt to people of color, I think, and Native peoples and other peoples who have been willing to stand there with allies and be hosed down, right, for everyone.
Yes.
But I think that's one reason why it works, is because it's sustained and there's a breaking point in the narrative.
Yes. For those listening, too, we think of the civil rights movement. That was 14 years for change to occur, that they felt like, okay, this campaign is shifted now. You look at Wounded Knee, which is a landmark in Native American culture, and people died there, and it was resistance. And through that, we have such things as it becoming legal. Federal laws that allowed Native Americans to practice their spirituality came out of that movement. Also, there's 5 federal laws. One of the other ones is, so a law came into being that did not allow non-natives to take Native children from their home at random because they thought they were cute and wanted them. And so Indian Child Welfare now exists today, that law, that federal law that came out of that resistance. If you just tuned in, this is a segment of Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. We're here in conversation with 3 ministers from the Christian tradition. We have Reverend Megan Owens, Pilgrim Congregational United Church of Christ in Reading, who's the pastor. Reverend Bob Swartz, St. James Lutheran Church, the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America here in Reading, California. And Reverend Tim Garman, who's the pastor at Happy Valley Community Church. So Bob and Tim, you've heard Megan's comment. So Tim, Reverend Tim.
Oh, thank you, Lynn. Megan brought up some great points about the civil resistance part of that. Most of society wants to be do it legally and be civil resistance instead of the civil discourse. But I think what you're seeing in today's age with the current administration, a lot of the, not a lot, but some of their supporters are becoming very violent to the people who are being civil because the people who are being civil are starting to see success. You could take some of the protests against ICE, even some of the No Keynes protests, where you probably have more than 3.5% of the people getting together. And they're starting to see success from that, so you're seeing a lot more violence come out. And we're seeing it with the killings from ICE. It seems like daily anymore. The violence has become okay, and again, the violence has to stop. Civil discourse has to be, civil resistance has to be the way. And it's hard when the other side is being violent. I don't know how you balance that out and how you stop that and how you stay civilly resistant when you are being threatened and when you are being beaten and when you are being hurt. I don't know.
Yeah, it is a dilemma. Reverend Bob?
I think that for us here in Reading, civil resistance looks different simply because of the nature of where we are. One of the things that works both for our country and against our country in terms of civil rights discussions is that we are so vast in geography. And so many people that I talk with are not even aware of what is happening in other places, depending on where they choose to get their media. They are not even aware that killings are happening. They are not aware that people are being held indefinitely without trial. And that is a piece that I think we really need to address the information deficit in our country as well, and in our area as well. I know this somewhat now falls outside the discussion of civil resistance, but I think that sometimes spreading the word is an important thing to do, not only as faith leaders to say, this is what Jesus says, this is what our faith tells us, but also this is what's happening right now. And the fact that much of this information is not spread is, to me, a sign that people know that it is not acceptable, and people know that ultimately it's not popular, because otherwise, why would it be kept from us?
Yeah. Reverend Tim, you had a thought?
I did, but I may have misread Bob. When you said spread the word, are you speaking of the gospel, or are you just speaking of the topic on hand?
The topic on hand, okay. But also the gospel, sure.
Okay. Well, the reason I brought the question up is because the gospel, and I had somebody comment the other day on social media how Canada passed a law, they can no longer quote scripture out of the Bible. And that is not the case. They did do some laws, but that's not the reality. But unfortunately, people are seeing this in social media. They're believing this. And those beliefs are becoming, gives them the right to become more violent in their minds. And I think that's part of what we're facing today, is these challenges of the untruths that are being shared widely and without people fact-checking anything. It just leads to more and more discourse.
Yes. I've had people say, I do not watch the news. I just can't stand it. And my encouragement is, it's important to tune in. It's important to fact check. Just because you see something online or said by news, you can go and check to see if it's factual. I do that on a regular basis because of all the misinformation that's out there. And, you know, you look at around the world in different circumstances, the role of media. Media is critical to be able to share information. Is it always 100% accurate? No, but you have images now and video that show things that are transpiring. Most law enforcement were required to wear body cameras. Well, it makes a question when the ICE agent doesn't have a body camera on and these things transpire. Oftentimes, there'll be video from other sources that you can see what unfolded. But to say I'm not going to watch the news is how does faith play a role in this? You know, is the big dilemma. Do we simply just pull ourselves in and not participate in culture? Or is the call for us to engage at a level that demonstrates what energy? God is love.
I think you have a lot of people who are just so tired of the divisiveness and the hatred and all the political world. They just tune out the news in general. They just don't want to. They just it'll consume somebody if you let it, and I think that's part of it. So they would in tune choose to just step back. But at the same time, we should know what's happening in the rest of the world. We should know if these killings are happening. Because if we don't, then we're blinded by it. And then when it becomes a topic that you do run into, if you haven't educated yourself at all and you've been ignorant to the situation, your opinion's going to probably be wrong.
Yeah. And I think it isn't, to me, the teachings of the Christian tradition is always about balance in our way of life and integrating in the consciousness and teachings of Christ. And so, you know, I think that's what we're called to bring to our lives. We have about 2 minutes left. So closing thought about what you want to leave our listeners with from your perspective about this whole dilemma. Certainly we have not covered all that there is, have we? We need a whole lot more time. But just a closing comment from your perspective on this whole dilemma. What's your encouragement to community? Bob?
Speaking as a faith leader, I would say to Christians, regardless of what your affiliation is or your support is, I would step beyond the broad surface level American Christian faith in Jesus and look at the faith of Jesus and say, what is Jesus speaking to and working toward in the scripture? I am constantly reminded nowadays of a sermon that Dietrich Bonhoeffer gave in the early 40s on the rich man and Lazarus. And Bonhoeffer said, take Christ as he is or hate him honestly, which is to say, don't invent a Jesus that agrees with everything you agree with and hates the same people that you hate and smiles blandly as you do whatever you intend to do in the world. That as Christians, we are called to something different.
Yes. How about you, Reverend Reagan, in 30 seconds?
I think I would say you're not alone. We're not alone in it. And the more we come together and recognize that and support one another, and remember that Jesus invited people to a table, and we can create tables wherever we are of welcome and love. And yes, reading into the spirit of Jesus' life and teachings rather than trying to create some kind of literal biography helps us in our inner work, which then helps us as we greet the world as it is.
Yes. How about you, Reverend Tim?
God's kingdom has no boundaries. I want people to realize that. God's kingdom has no boundaries. Jesus loves you whether you're black, white, brown, native, or any other ethnicity. He loves everyone, and he loves you.
Yeah. Powerful. One of the thoughts I want us to leave this program with for our listeners and ourselves is around the work of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. He said, nonviolence, also, I would say nonviolence for social change, is the answer to the crucial political and moral questions of our time. He said that in his lifetime. The need for man to overcome oppression and violence without resorting to oppression and violence. That is our challenge, isn't it? And certainly, no matter where we go, whether we ascribe to a particular faith tradition, all of us have a belief system that we carry with us. And I think what's up for our culture today is examining that deeply. And how does that play a role in how I show up in my life, how I show up in community, how I relate to what's transpiring in our nation and in our communities? So I want to encourage all of us here and our listeners to think about all these things we've contemplated, and we want to make this day and every day a day to enjoy exceptional living. Thank you for joining us.